I am Sam. Sam, I am. I am Sam, I am, I am.
Oh, doctor, the doctor. There's something about the openness of the mind of a child that makes concepts like green eggs and ham not only plausible, but essential. Cats with weird hats, snitches, and Loraxes, rhymes like one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish, become part of your neurons. Dr. Seuss, you hear him there, was more than a writer. His insights into kids perhaps were more authoritative than any brain scan. So the idea that there's more that can be added to the Horton Hears a Who oeuvre is perhaps a major event in civilization, let alone the annals of child literature. World, meet, or should we say, re-meet, the Bipolo Seed, Zinniga Zanniga, and Gustav the Goldfish, among the titles of obscure Dr. Seuss books that will be republished by Random House this fall. Our guest, Charles Cohen, we welcome to the program. Good morning, Charles.
Well, good morning. How are you, John and Celeste?
We are great. I want to get this straight, though. You are a dentist by day, but you trekked from library to library all around the country in your spare time to find these stories. Is that about right?
Yes. It wasn't specifically these stories. These are things that I found while I was researching about Dr. Seuss in general.
And as a Dr. Seuss enthusiast and scholar, where were these stories originally that you could find them?
Well, these were actually not hiding so difficultly to find. These were in magazines that were published back in the early 1950s to late 1950s. They were in magazines like Red Book and Children's Activities. And it was just a question of tracking down copies of them and finding out that these stories actually were in those in particular issues.
And you get the alliteration in these titles, Bipolo Seed, Zinniga Zanniga, Gustav the Goldfish, certainly evokes Horton, Here's a Who. Would you say these are early Seuss, pinnacle Seuss, Seuss in development, or are these classics?
I think these will become classic, not because we're publishing the book now, but because these were specifically from the time that Dr. Seuss was becoming the Dr. Seuss that we know. Prior to these stories, specifically these seven ones that are from 1950 to 51, he had had 10 stories published. Four of them rhymed. Now, we associate him, of course, with rhyming. So back before these stories, he was not the same kind of writer. These stories were part of an experiment that he did to work with the language skills that he had to try to get kids caught by the rhythm of his writing, by the rhyme scheme that he used, so that kids as early as 3 years old would be able to memorize the stories, they'd be able to tell what was going on by the pictures, and then want to read what those strange little things were that people were somehow deciphering the story from.
That's so great. So in the early 50s, Proust wasn't really working for Dr. Seuss, so he shifted over to rhymes. This is Charles Cohen, dentist and Dr. Seuss enthusiast and scholar, responsible for Random House publishing a new book of stories that were originally published in magazines of Dr. Seuss. When's the pub date?
Comes out on the 27th of September.
All right.
Charles Cohen, you know, you said this was in the 1950s, and then actually he wrote a few children's books prior to World War II that were in prose. But during World War II, he actually worked he was a political cartoonist. He worked for the Army. He did a lot of things that most people don't associate with Dr. Seuss. Did you see any hints of that in these articles as well?
Well, not in these, but that's what I was referring to earlier, that my interest in Dr. Seuss was to find out all about the things that he did outside of the children's books that we were familiar with. So I've come across many of these things. As a matter of fact, I could speak for an hour and a half about things like his involvement in World War II, and his political cartoons, which actually go back to 1939. He used to do them for the New York Journal and American under the pseudonym of Ted, T-E-D-D, prior to the ones that became known a few years back that he did for PM newspaper. But he was in a lot of different fields that he was in. As a matter of fact, I was reading and seeing that, John, you've actually won a few more Emmys in Peabody than Dr. Seuss did, although he also won those. But I think he has you beat.
I'd trade him.
Beat doing the Academy Awards and the Grammys and Pulitzers and honorary doctorates. But I don't think things like Grammys are things that people associate with Dr. Seuss.
Although they might, because it's the lyric quality of Seuss that sort of creates this kind of universality to his language. You want to play a little game with us, Charles, this morning?
I love games.
All right, we asked our listeners to bring Seuss into the present moment and use his rhyme scheme and style to describe things that are going on, say, in the economy. And David Blackburn, Berkeley, Michigan, submitted this poem. People stepped right up on this, and we'll play you a couple of them.
I get worried about these. I got to tell you, politicians try to do this.
No, you're going to love this. No, and politicians can't do this.
You're right.
David Blackburn says, "I do not like this economy. I do not like these stormy seas. Bitter words from squabbling fools never creates realistic rules." Here's an instant classic.
My name's Lova, and I'm calling from Grand Forks, North Dakota. Red state, blue state, historic unemployment rate, debt default and tax debate, old campaigns, new candidates, corporate jets and fat cigars, Wall Street's hand in cookie jars. Say, what a lot of fools there are. Yes, some are red and some are blue. Some are old and some are new. What is false and what is true in all the rhetoric they spew?
Charles Cohen, what a legacy. You say, give us a Seuss about the news, and boom, people do that. What do you make of it?
Well, I've got to tell you that my favorite thing, I think, of his on the economic situation was actually something he called the economic situation clarified. It was an illustration that he did back in the 70s. And if you can picture a sort of Escher-esque illustration, you have one set of Seussian birds walking to the left, and then on top of their heads, another set walking to the right, another set on top of those walking to the left. Sort of his commentary about our economic situation back in the 70s. So he frequently did a lot of topical work, and I have no doubt at all that he would have something to say now about what's going on in our country.
Hey, the Lorax completely envisioned Al Gore, probably
before
he came up with his whole climate change thing. Charles, determine if this list is an enthusiast of Seuss or a scholar of Seuss?
This is Nicholas Gallant from Grand Forks, North Dakota. The news have you wheeling in disgust, your head down to your souls as the debt ceiling grows. Take a breath and relax as our leaders debate. Like a demotee Republu places sex and continues to control our fate.
I love that coining of the name of a crazy creature. That's also university.
You'll get to meet a whole bunch of new creatures in the new book here. In the story, A Steak for Supper, we meet creatures like the wild weef. I just love the sound of those. But they're also the great, crazy characters that you associate with the Seuss menagerie.
And who are we going to meet? We're going to meet the Zinnezaniga, a character or a place?
Actually, the Zinnezaniga is a type of tree.
Uh-huh.
There's a rabbit and a bear that have a face-off. The bear obviously having the upper hand on the strength, but the rabbit's kind of like Brer Rabbit or Bugs Bunny. He outwits the larger opponent by using, in this case, the Zinnezaniga tree.
I'm feeling a little connection to Gustav the Goldfish myself.
Are you? Well, Gustav the Goldfish is a fascinating story for me. When I discovered it, I realized that the story sounded familiar. There was a very well-known book called A Fish Out of Water that was done by Helen Palmer, who happened to be Helen Palmer Geisel, Ted Geisel's wife.
Yeah.
And he gave her the story to utilize. She wrote it in prose, and it was illustrated by one of the other illustrators at Beginner Books. But if you enjoyed that story, you get to read what Dr. Seuss did with it prior to that, only in his rhyme and with his illustrations. And it's a great tale about a boy who overfeeds his little goldfish that turns into something the size of a whale.
Check it all out on September 17th. That's the pub date when Random House brings out 7 new titles of rarely seen Dr. Seuss stories, curated and found by our good friend now, Charles Cohen, dentist and Dr. Seuss enthusiast and scholar. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you. And if I can just tell Celeste that if you ever get a chance to, now that you're living in New Jersey, if you ever get a chance to find Dr. Seuss's little article called The New New Jersey.
I will take a look for it, Charles. We have to go. I'm Celeste Headley. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.